This week on The Future of Sex.
I was a 16-year-old girl who had never kissed a boy, never really even like held hands. So for me, it was a huge shock that suddenly I was a slut.
And he went away for work and he said, while I'm away at work, will you send me sexy photos of yourself? I was like, why?
I just feel really empowered when I send naked photos.
My boyfriend and I have been together for about 2.5 years now. Yeah. But he's always asking me for new photos, like over text. And I'm not really into that.
So last week, my boyfriend took a naked Snapchat of me. And instead of sending it to me as a joke, he accidentally sent it to my mother.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to another episode of Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Well, it's been a little break between episodes since I've been in Australia for about a month, meeting with a ton of experts in sex tech. There's been some amazing innovations coming right out of Melbourne, my hometown, where the world's first sex toy design course was placed in university. Amazing, right? I'm so excited to be back in New York and catching up on all the great emails and voicemails you guys sent in. And thank you so much for leaving reviews in iTunes. It seriously makes my day to read the reviews and know that you're listening to this podcast while you're taking your morning commute on the tube in London or on the beach in Australia. Today, we'll be diving into technology's influence on the feminine form and how the internet has amplified our human expressions in the best and the worst ways. Before we get started, we just want to remind you, this podcast contains explicit language and adult themes. So please make sure you've got headphones in if there are little ones around. From nude celebrity photo leaks to the most recent military scandal involving Facebook pages with non-consensual photos of ex-girlfriends and partners of Marines, revenge porn is now a dark reality of the internet. Then there is the consensual booty selfies, or belfies, body positive movements, and the empowering communities on Tumblr, proudly displaying their nudity online.
She has sent you a selfie.
As we live an increasing amount of our lives online, bearing all can be part of the courtship process, a powerful way to control our image, or a way to reveal a curated version of ourselves. On top of that, over the years, across cultures and new technologies, our ideas have changed as to what's acceptable as amount of skin to show and who has permission over what image. I mean, can it be empowering to send nudes? Or is it slutty to have a photo of yourself in a bikini on a dating app? On today's episode, we're going to explore the theme of women's sexuality and power on the internet. And bear in mind, I'm taking a very small slice of an extremely diverse topic. The aim of this episode is really to shine a light on how technology can empower and disempower female sexuality. I'll be speaking with Emily Linden, founder of the Unslut Project, about the devastating effects of slut-shaming, and Sloane Cameron, a young woman in her 20s who is an active part of the Tumblr community and enjoys sharing and giving advice on how to perfect nude pics online. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Sloane Cameron. I'm 22 years old. I'm from Australia and I love sending nudes.
Okay. So tell me, why do you love sending nudes?
I just feel really empowered when I send naked photos. I kind of like that, I guess, somebody's like interested in me, and not like in a like she's a hot way, but like kind of like intrigued, like I want to see more. And I love having kind of that power of like, I'll show you what I want to show you, but you know, like a bit of a tease. And I just, it's fun.
Yeah. When was the first time you sent a nude pic?
So I was actually really young when I first sent nudes. I was 13, which was the first time I sent nudes, and I just loved it. Like, I was like, this is so much fun. Like, and it was, you know, it was a bit naughty, like my parents didn't know and like nobody knew, and I just, yeah, it was fun.
So 13 is like
9 years ago.
Yeah.
So we didn't have iPhones then.
No, we had really crappy flip phones and the picture quality was so terrible. But, I mean, it got the job done at the time and everybody's like, oh, that's so cool. Because, I mean, sending pictures was very new at that time as well. So I guess any picture was a cool picture. Now all my girlfriends send them and have them and we send them to each other, be like, is this one okay? Like, should I send that one? You know?
I asked Sloane if she had any recommendations for people that wanted to take nude pics but didn't really know where to start.
If anybody's sending nudes, I definitely recommend to get Photo Vault. It's a really good kind of secret folder, so you're not keeping them on your phone. So if people do go through, you know, they're not seeing your tits or your bum.
That's smart. Or when you open up your photo album you just, and you're like, oh gosh.
Mom, look at this for, oh, not me, don't swipe left.
I would be most unhappy if my daughter did that. Or my son.
Yeah? I think I'm gonna take a photo.
Shut up.
I'm excited for what it could be.
Okay, so what about couples sharing nude pics? You know, I always like to make the show relevant for my couples that are listening. And here is where I stumbled across the work of researcher and clinician Dr. Mattu. Dr. Mattu believes the politics of the nude photo line up pretty perfectly with the politics of consent and that it can benefit a relationship. In his words, when we think about consent, it's two people actually having a discussion and saying, hey, I'm wondering if this is something you're comfortable with, is this something you'd want to do? If both people in the relationship do actually consent to sharing these types of photos or videos with each other, it can actually really strengthen the satisfaction of the person in the relationship. As Mattu sees it, trouble arises when we use the distance of digital communication, sexting and nude pics, as an excuse to avoid having tough conversations in person completely, presenting only the most carefully curated versions of ourselves to each other, blindly hoping we'll end up on the same page. In other words, depending on the way you use them, nudes can be just as much of a way of exposing ourselves to each other as a way of preventing them from truly seeing us.
But that conversation to ask for permission is a weird conversation because really when you ask, hey, do you want to start sexting? Really what you're asking the other person is, hey, do you want to ensure that neither of us can ever become prime minister? That's really what you're asking.
I'm caught up. What they're doing nowadays is they're sending nude photos, which I think is not a good thing.
I guess somebody's looking for some selfies.
Somebody wants to see some nudes. That's all good.
I wouldn't be doing that, but that's what young people do today.
Carefully constructing a false image to send to your lover or a potential mate isn't the only thing we should be concerned about. In fact, it's probably the last thing, because it's when those pictures fall into the wrong hands or when a relationship ends on a sour note and your images are shared non-consensually that nude images can be used to control, abuse and shame people. Now, you might be thinking this will never happen to you, but a recent study in Australia found 1 in 5 people have been victims of image-based abuse or revenge porn as it's often known. And that's only people that are aware their image has been shared. Researchers say the number is probably a lot higher, and there are many victims who probably are not aware their images have been distributed online without their consent and might not ever find out. Sadly, the younger the population, the higher the number affected. The number of people who have been victims of image-based abuse goes to 1 in 3 people between the ages of 16 and 19. And this new form of sexual violence is actually a lot more complex than we initially thought when it was originally dubbed revenge porn, which makes it sound like it was something a jilted ex-lover would do. In fact, this sort of non-consensual distribution of images was found to be common across a diverse range of relationships and communities. So, what can we do? Laws and policies are scrambling to catch up. Currently in Australia, only 2 states, Victoria and South Australia, have laws around image-based abuse. In Canada, a recent law has been introduced and just over half the country in the US have created legislation around this. But beyond the law, we need tools and ways to understand how to help survivors.
The survey revealed the psychological toll revenge porn takes on victims is devastating. Most are affected by severe depression or anxiety. One person who is trying to help and give a voice to those that are often the most invisible, the victims, is Emily Linden. Emily is a documentary filmmaker and activist who's documenting the experience of sexual harassment and providing a voice for those subjected to this type of abuse that now follows us pretty much everywhere, from school corridors to Facebook, back to our bedrooms.
I'm Emily Linden. I founded the Unslut Project. I'm the author of Unslut, A Diary and a Memoir, and the director and producer of Unslut, a documentary film. And the purpose of the Unslut Project and all the related projects is to give voice to girls and women who have been subjected to sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual shaming, what's often called slut shaming, and to provide some sense of solidarity for people who are currently going through this type of abuse and harassment so that they know they can overcome it too and won't turn to self-harm or, in the worst cases, suicide, as is unfortunately way too common among young women who are subjected to this type of harassment.
The Halifax teen took her own life after she was allegedly gang-raped and bullied when photos of the attack circulated online.
I just took a whole bottle of pills. Like, I wanted my life to be over with.
And since this happened, Daisy, I know you have endured some horrible things. What has your life been like? What changed after this?
There was really a lot of cyberbullying. And I really, at first, I didn't really, it didn't affect me as much. But whenever you hear it so often that you're all these different things, then you start to believe it. And I really did start to hate myself.
I found that personal story sharing is an international, really effective way to reach people who feel alone and hopeless, and also to demonstrate just how widespread and deeply rooted this problem is across the world in different ways. It's something that, especially in the United States right now, is really prevalent and really scary because it seems to have been affirmed at the highest office. For young women, it's especially terrifying because you're unable to escape it the way, you know, when I was in middle school, I could just get home and be in my parents' house. And, you know, this was in the late 90s, so we had one family computer in a very public spot where I was still, you know, the target of online harassment through proto-social media, I guess, AOL Instant Messenger, which is all I had access to. But nowadays, when students have their phones with them all the time, and this whole layer of their social lives that's tied to an internet connection and to social media in particular, they can't be cut off from that. I mean, cutting them off from that is in some ways kind of a punishment for being bullied on those platforms because it's also a lifeline to their friends. So it's really complicated because they have this whole other aspect of their social lives that the adults who are trying to help them don't understand as well as they do. And it's tricky. It's really tricky to navigate. And it, as you said, can make it in some cases even worse because there's no easy, immediate escape like there used to be for those of us who grew up before the age of the internet. In 2013, when I started this project, it was because I read on Twitter about a girl named Rataya Parsons who had committed suicide at age 17 in Nova Scotia because of being sexually assaulted by her classmates and then harassed for over a year because of it instead of getting support. And I was living in Southern California, so this type of news would never have reached me before the age of Twitter and stories spreading so quickly. And so I do think that while all of the news stories and headlines and outrage related to these incidences is much more prevalent now, there's also a positive aspect to that, which is that we hear about the stories that used to just be pushed under the carpet and forgotten about, or women used to just suffer in silence without a way to speak openly and share their stories. Thank you. one of the most problematic aspects of it is that we, having reached adulthood and having had, and by we, I mean people who are millennials and older, having reached adulthood and gone through our preteen and teenage kind of adolescent years without sexting being part of the equation, we can sext with each other if we like. You know, like I can send a sexy photo where I feel confident and look awesome to my husband, and that is unfortunately not incredibly safe, but there's nothing inherently morally abhorrent about it. It should be a fun and casual way to interact with someone sexually without the risk of STI transmission, frankly, or pregnancy. But because of the way that these photos are used against the girls who in some cases create them and in some cases have them shared against their consent, it's incredibly dangerous and it can be life-destroying, especially if they're shared non-consensually on the internet. And so, which happens often. And so the hard thing is we as adults who are trying to raise responsible internet citizens or digital citizens and internet users don't have that experience to go on. When we were going through those feelings for the first time, and we were going through this incredibly awkward and fraught time of adolescence, we didn't have this whole other complicating factor of whether or not and how and in what context to communicate sexually using technology. It just wasn't a decision that we had to face. And so I talk to a lot of parents who are panicking because they want to raise sexually responsible people, and they also want to raise technologically responsible and capable people, but we don't have that experience to go from. So we're kind of like learning along with our children, and that is new. That's something that no other generation of parents has had to go through in quite a similar way. I mean, there's always new technology, but this kind of exponential growth and the ways that sexuality plays into it is new, really unprecedented.
And it feels like at the same time we're going through a revolution in terms of women more in control, having more of a voice around their own sexuality.
You know, on the one hand, we're becoming much more comfortable with frank and straightforward acceptance of women's authentic sexuality. I mean, we're not necessarily needing, at least in some communities, to conform to a standard of typical beauty or typical sexiness. And there are wonderful communities on Tumblr and across the internet of people of all genders who are embracing their awesomeness and their sexiness, whatever that looks like. And I celebrate that along with the people in those communities. And I think the reason that that's just not all 100% wonderful is that it's kind of outpacing a lot of older generations' understanding of what is decent and what is kind of a proper way to perform womanhood, I guess. So I do think, I mean, I'm hopeful, and I've been saying for a while now, actually, that in the next couple of decades, there will be probably no such thing as, you know, a political sex scandal involving photos that were released online or what have you, because everyone coming up in the younger generations will have something incriminating about them circulating somewhere. I mean, I think it's just the meaning of what is incriminating has to change. Otherwise, we're all in trouble. And I think we'll hold each other to a different standard. But while there is still a large portion of the population who grew up without the internet, who have kind of adopted it as adults and are still kind of uncomfortable with all of the doors that it opens, and have missed out on this sexual reawakening and a new type of feminism that embraces authentic sexuality, or, you know, newish type of feminism, being much more public. I think that's where the tension is that we are kind of unable to reconcile those two things right now. But I'm hopeful that eventually everyone who is alive will be expected to be somewhat comfortable with people celebrating their bodies, whatever they look like, and being open and authentic about their sexuality, and will also be comfortable with using technology to do those things in a way that is safe and consensual.
Even girls who post photos of their bikinis on Tinder I know have been scrutinized. Like a few of my friends have been called sluts and stuff for having photos of themselves in a bikini, but then yet guys will come on Tinder and be like, oh, why is there so many face shots, or like, show your body. And so I don't know, I don't understand it.
Situation for women.
Yeah. And it's just not fair, really, is it?
No. We're starting with a great question for a Friday morning. Which would you rather have leaked online? This is actually serious, okay? Would you rather have someone leak nude photos of you or your financial information?
Neither.
No, take my money.
Yeah.
Take my money.
While slut-shaming and its consequences are emotionally devastating, the other side of the internet can also be a haven of positivity and empowerment, especially for young women. There is no one right way to navigate these complexities of our attitudes mixed up with the internet. And given the lack of regulations online, it's a world we are all growing up in simultaneously and trying to figure out together. As per all my shows, I asked my guests my favourite question. What is the future of sex?
So I think the future of sex, it's just nice to see the attitudes changing, and I think that's going to continue to change as like my generation gets older, and I think people are just going to feel more comfortable, more open about it.
I think there's going to be a period of shame and kind of horror, and we're going through a bit of it right now as technology makes it very easy to use someone's sexuality against them as a weapon. However, beyond that time, I think within, you know, the near future, we'll overcome that rather quickly. We'll need to, because of how rapidly things are changing. And I think the future of sex and how technology will play into that will be that we recognize through necessity just how individual and specific everyone's sexual desires and turn-ons and masturbation preferences and lifestyles are, and how okay that is. I think the concept of someone being depraved or icky or weird or gross for having a particular kink will go out the window. And I think eventually we'll get to a place, hopefully, where the only type of sexual, and I'll put sexual in quotations because it's really not inherently what it is, but the only type of sexual, public sexuality that is disdained and punished is actual violence or non-consensual spreading of images. I really hope that's where we're going. And I am hopeful that at least the first part of that prophecy will come true, that we'll be confronted with the vast array of different sexual turn-ons and desires and kinks, and that we'll all kind of feel okay with other people being turned on by whatever they like, and that we're able to do the same thing.
Thanks for listening to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Special thanks to Emily Linden and Sloan Cameron for being a part of this episode. If you want links to any of Emily's projects or the current research on revenge porn, make sure you check out the episode show notes on futureofsex.org. And if you want to find a way to support the show, please consider writing a review on iTunes today. It only takes a few minutes, but it really helps. And next Monday, if you're in New Jersey, I will be in Jersey City. It's the Future of Sex Tech Meetup, and I'll be joining some of the guests that have been previously on the show, including Polly Rodriguez of Unbound and Alex Fine of Dame Products, as well as some other local sex tech pioneers to, of course, discuss the future. This podcast was produced and edited by Chad Michael Snavely. To get in touch with Chad or check out the other podcasts he's producing, please visit chadmichael.com. And as usual, if you have any questions or feedback or just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow me on Twitter at Bryony Cole or drop me an email, hello@futureofsex.org. Thanks for listening, and talk to you soon.